This podcast has been maybe 2 years in the making, and I am so excited. Honestly, Carol, you have been one of the guests that I've been looking for and forward to interviewing for the last 2 years, since I've known you, actually. I'm really honored that you're on my podcast, Carol. I think this is such a full circle moment for me, especially given the fact that when I met you, you were teaching us about leadership and about choosing our own careers and being our own person. And that is exactly what I did as a result of your learning. So, Carol, I owe you a real debt of gratitude, first of all. Thank you for waking me up to the potential that I had. And I'm so glad that you're here. And I don't know if you know how much it means for me that you are here today. So thank you so much, Carol.
Thank you, Jerry. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. So Carol Musyoka, if you don't know, is the chief provocateur of Carol Musyoka Consulting. But more than that, she's just an amazing woman, such a rich career, which we will talk about just now. So Carol, what in your youth instilled that bubbly nature, that character of yours, that zest for life, an ability to know that you could succeed? What was it in your youth?
You know, I've thought about that question, and I just had a very vanilla life growing up. But looking back at it, it was not vanilla when you look at how families are today. So I had a very loving family. I had a beautiful, wonderful, fantastic father who was never afraid to say, I love you. Something that was very uncommon in those days with a proper Kikuyu man.
And could still be.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, and a wonderful mom. My mother was a career banker. So between the two of them, they set up a very stable home. So I just had my sister, my brother, and I.
Where do you fall?
In the middle.
In the middle. Okay,
like me. A complete middle child. And I honestly, I look back and I say probably it was just growing up in a very, very stable home that gave me the impetus and gave me the foundation for who I am today.
Okay. So you are a lawyer, which a lot of people don't know. What was it, the specific skill that you thought that you could bring to a legal career? What gave you that hunger?
I loved research and I loved reading. And like I said, in one of my Engage talks, I was watching Rage of Angels by Sydney Sheldon.
Yeah.
And, you know, the main protagonist, this lady, I forget her name. And, you know, she was just brilliant. She just had a little bit of drama in the way she delivered her legal work. And believe it or not, I got inspiration because I watched it I watched the movie. I read the book and then I watched the movie. And I was like, I want to do that.
I want to be like,
then I went into a law firm and I was like, maybe not. Yeah. It's not, that's when your first character development, if you, when you start working as a pupil, you were chaperoned a proper character.
Where did you do your pupillage?
I did it at Oraro and Rache. At those days, it was Oraro and Rache. Okay. Then they eventually split up. But it was the best. I loved it. I pupilled under Chacha Odera was my
Chacha.
Was my senior, and George Orero, of course, was a partner, and Ambrose Rachir worked very closely with my pupil master. Cecil Miller was a senior at that time, a senior associate at the time.
The firm at that time.
At the time, yes. So we were working under him, and it was a time of great learning. I loved, don't get me wrong, I loved my pupillage, Jerry. But by the end of it, I knew.
You didn't want to do that. One of the things that has always struck me about you, and even when someone is, you know, being trained by you, is that you're not afraid to say, to be vulnerable about difficulties and how to overcome those difficulties. But not everyone has that same character trait. What do you think it is about you specifically, or what have you put in your mind that if it's a difficult time, like, you know, when you talk in the Engage talk about you being told, Carolina, beauty without brains. What is it about that makes you say, I'm not going to stop there. I'm going to persevere and push further?
My motto, Jerry, is it's never that serious. Okay. And I use a lot of self-deprecating humor.
Yes,
I laugh at myself a lot because, to be honest, it's never that serious. My father died young. My father died at 64. He had a very rare form of cancer. He had cancer of the duodenum. And I told you, I loved my father.
Yeah.
Immensely, and it was a big part of my life. And of course, as you're reading up on it and just figuring out what it is that you need to do to make his life easier and everything as he was on his last days,
one of the things that I read about cancer was that a key cause of cancer is stress, because stress causes you to generate to release a hormone called cortisol or something like that. And my father's last year in life was also a very stressful time for me in the banking. At the time, I was having very great difficulties with my boss at the time. My takeaway from that period, because I had to wake up and say, was a key, no person is going to send me to the grave. Nobody, not one single person, not one single job is going to send me to an early grave. I'm not going to be stressed about anything. I watched my father's half and I'm like, Jerry, our kids never that serious.
And that puts a lot of perspective into things, I guess. So from the legal career, you moved on to being a corporate officer, to being a relationship manager, to being a senior relationship manager, and then a corporate director at Barclays, which is now APSA. From all of those jobs, starting from a junior level to a senior level, what is it about those jobs that were the high highs that made you go on, and then the low lows that made you rethink, maybe, am I in the right place?
The high highs were cracking it. You know, somebody sent, I saw something, I think it was on LinkedIn or just on social media, about you spend your entire time as a junior wanting to be in the room in those meetings.
In those meetings, yeah.
And then you get into those meetings and you spend the rest of your life like, I want to get out of these meetings, just get me out of here. And then somebody put in a corollary to that and said, you want to get into those meetings because you think everybody there is extremely smart. And you get into those rooms and you realize, okay, people here, they're actually very kawaida people.
Yeah.
There's no difference, you know, from an IQ perspective, I'm the same as these people. So getting in there was, my high highs was cracking it, learning how to first sell. Because when I went into banking, I worked at Citibank first, and I went into public sector, and we were the first team, myself and my boss at the time, a lovely lady called Esther Ngaile, were just starting public sector.
Yeah.
Marketing to parastatals.
Yeah.
Citibank still is a very hoity-toity bank, just dealt with top-tier local corporates and multinationals. We had a boss who had just come in from Pakistan, and in Pakistan, public sector was a big thing. So he's like, no, we're going to set up public sector. And we started with blank slate, clean slate, going, knocking on these doors, Kenya Railways, yeah. Kenya Ports Authority, Kenya Pipeline, going and knocking on these doors and convincing them why they needed to bank with us. And we slowly started to crack it.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, if I was to look back on my career, that was my high highs, you know, signing up the first account when we signed up Kenya Ports Authority and starting to do banking with them. And the ship-to-shore gantries that you see were the ones who opened the LCs and did all of that financing. And it was exciting. And then started to realize, this is not rocket science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, with banking, what it is, at least from a relationship management perspective, is, Jerry, you market at three levels. You market at the accountant, the one who does the, you know, you took me around your office and
you did Benjamin.
Benjamin. Mm-hmm. The person who does those entries, okay, into the electronic banking, the person who will sign the checks and go to do the banking, you market to him, you market to the finance director, because he's the one who makes the decision. And then you market to the MD, the CEO, because he's the one who sells it to the board when you're getting board approval. And when that cracked for me, and you're marketing to them at different levels. So you, this guy at the bottom, you're taking me to a Kibandanski. There's a number of Kibandanskis I've been to in this town, because he does not want to go into Serena, because he'll meet his bosses and he'll be completely wowed. So you might think, oh, if you're taking him to Serena, he'll feel happy. He's not happy. He's uncomfortable. His bosses will see him. They'll ask him, what are you doing here? Go into the Kibandanski with him. The finance director and the MD, they want to go into Serena. So if you talk about Serena, Nairobi, your FD, you'll take him to Serena by the poolside, Cafe Maghreb. The MD, you'll take him upstairs to Mandari.
Okay.
Learning how to market at different levels and it being able to have conversations at those different levels is also a skill that you have to draw on. So those are my high highs. Low lows, I would say, was maybe family related, losing my father, bringing up girls, going through the ups and downs of their going through teenagehood. Because bring anyone who's
how many girls do you
have? I've got two
girls.
One
how old are they now? 20.
One is 20.
Yeah, you don't even look like you have a 20-year-old, Carol.
No, stop the blue band. So yes, she's in her second year. She's in Georgia State University, and then my second one is 12 and a half, going on 20. She's so smart. But, you know, just going through the vagaries of life with them can be, I would say sort of the low lows, but learning to come out of them.
Yeah. But also, was it difficult managing bringing up the girls as well as having such a high-flying career?
You need a support structure. I always say if you're going to have children, I talk to my friends, some of my friends are considering adoption. If you're going to adopt children or have children as a single mother, you have to have a support structure. I have a wonderful, my mom, between my mother and my sister,
yeah,
my children don't know anybody else.
Okay. But
in terms of, we operate almost as a single. We do holidays together. We do Sunday lunches together.
Yeah.
So they've grown up with my nephew, my mom, my sister. We've grown up as a single unit.
Yeah, and I think that's important. That's been your support system. 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Then I had two very good nannies. So because of traveling, because I travel a lot. So if you don't have that home structure that knows that the home will continue, whether you're there or not. So I've had really good home support structure.
Yeah. So during that Engage talk that you spoke about how you parted ways, let's say, with Barclays at the time, I think it was very well curated in the way that you can be self-deprecating and, you know, make jokes about it. But it must have been a very, very difficult time to go all the way to Dubai to meet a boss. He doesn't want to meet you. You're then in a situation where you don't know where you are. You're being told this left, right, and center. You drafted a letter of resignation, which was extremely sharp, and then retracted it. Luckily enough, you were able to. We're in those actual moments, Carol. I mean, it's not something that you talk about very easily. How do you get through that? For anyone who's thinking about leaving their job or not in a very comfortable position with where they are, what advice would you give them? And it's not laugh through the pain.
No, it's not laugh through the pain. That was a very hard time, Jerry. And in fact, when all that drama was going on, that's the same time that my father was ill. Then he was literally on his deathbed. So it was a very dark, very difficult time. But you have to plow through it, Jerry. I know you have to wake up tomorrow morning. You know, I love this product called Johnny Walker, because they're saying, let's keep on walking. You have to keep on walking. It sounds cliche. It sounds boring. But you have to wake up in the morning and say, okay, now what will I deal with today? What is today's chaos? One of the mottos that I live with is I stress about the things I'm in control of, Jerry. You cannot stress about the things you're not in control of.
Yeah.
Then you'll be in a permanent state of stress. I was telling somebody yesterday, you know, you don't know the day you're going to die. So you can't sit here stressing, but I'm going to, I don't know. You can't. We all forge ahead and we move on.
Yeah.
Same thing. At that time, it was a very, very dark time. And so I just focus on, let me wake up today and let me deal with what I'm going to deal with today. So my budget for stress is X amount, all right? So if you bring me your stress, okay, it's not in my budget.
Yeah,
so you just step aside and apply, make your application for stress tomorrow. But today, okay, you're not going to mess me up. So it's literally just Johnny Walker rule. Just keep on walking. You have to plow ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is that as a result of that you decided, let me start my own consulting? Or how did you transition?
I transitioned because I moved to another organization.
Oh, yeah, you moved to KREP.
Yes, yeah. I don't like talking much about it because this is SNLV, so let's see.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was.
It was not pleasant.
What's the rating? The voice?
We have one. I think we have this general.
Yes. I would have used a much more colorful language. That
really?
Was a difficult. I thought Barclays was bad. That one was even tough because it was a very closed organization. I remember my banking career had been through two multinationals,
yeah,
Citibank and Barclays. And you can go through multinational life thinking that's how organizations operate. You can actually go through thinking that's how multinationals operate.
Because they have systems in place and they've been around for so long.
They have systems and they have policies. And it's until you go to a local organization that you start to understand. You know, constitutions, Jerry, are never written in peacetime. They're written in wartime. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've gone through a lot and you're trying to solve for what caused the war in the first place in your constitution.
Yeah.
Similarly, policies in banks, in organizations, it's not somebody who woke up in the morning and said, let me come up with this policy. No, a policy comes up because something bad has happened. Either there's been a fraud, or there's just been, you know, the people are
angry, too rectified,
happy and everything.
Yeah.
one person is being given leave for 30 days, one person is being given 20 days, you know, these. So it's to rectify and to equate everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about multinational banks, because they've been around for over 100 years in many cases. They've had so many issues, A, over time, but B, over multiple jurisdictions. So you've got a bank that has got a branch in Singapore and a branch in Dakar, Senegal. So an issue can arise in Singapore. The minute that issue is resolved, a policy is done global.
That solves for everyone.
That solves for everybody.
Yeah.
Now, when you go to a local bank, their only the exposure is A, the number of years they've been in existence, and B, the jurisdiction they've been operating.
Yeah.
So you go in there, and the first thing you're like, going, wait, what do you mean we? What do you mean we don't have? What? So, you know, I remember I was spending my first 6 weeks convinced we were going to collapse, because I'd come up in these two banks, these other multinationals, knowing if you don't have this and you don't have that, you're going to collapse.
As a bank. You were spoiled.
Posh.
Yeah, you were posh.
You are banking. Then you come here and you're like, what do you mean you don't? What? So first you're constantly like this, you're waiting for the crash. Then you realize, actually, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Actually, imagine they've survived and they'll continue
and
to
survive.
But, you know, there was just a lot of, let's just say, without going into details, it was difficult. It was very closed. It was a fiefdom. It had its own deep internal issues. And I left. I had to leave.
Yeah.
Because the people then sort of coalesced around each other. So it was a difficult one. But because it came so soon, Jerry, after me leaving Barclays, I actually had to have a board meeting with myself. So first thing I did was, my brother lived in Fort Lauderdale, him and his wife.
In Florida,
yeah. So I decided to go and lick my wounds. You know, I just go for cover.
Yeah.
And I went to stay with them for about 4 weeks. And they were moving from Fort Lauderdale to Milwaukee. So I was helping them do the move. And so I had a lot of time to just sit and reflect. And what that time allows you to do, Jerry, is to ask yourself, okay, you've just left Barclays, you've just left this other organization within 10 months of each other. Either these two organizations are messed up or I'm messed up. What's a common denominator here?
Yeah,
it's me. I mean, sometimes you have to get over yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you have to get, we can get very high on our own supply, particularly when you get to a certain level and you're very senior and you're driving big cars and you've got big offices, you can actually get very high on your own supply. So when you bring brought crashing back down, and you could time now to just sit there, wait for a coconut to fall on your head. Like, was it Isaac Newton? Who hit the apple that fell on
you? It's Isaac Newton.
It was Newton. Then you're like, okay, the problem here is me. So maybe I'm done with working for people. It's time to work with people. I have no clue, Jerry, what I'm going to do. None whatsoever. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to start working for myself. I'll figure this thing out.
Yeah.
That was 2008, September. It's now what, 15 years?
Yeah.
So 16, 15 years, yeah?
Yeah, 8, 15.
Yeah, 15 years, exactly. November.
Amazing. Yeah. Let me ask you a question. On the leaving, have you ever been afraid to be the person that is standing out and being the own? Are you afraid to be the bad person, like, you know, bad cop in a situation? And are you confident in the decisions that you're making? Whereas some people would be like, let me be more collegiate and agree with everything. Is it because you've been always confident in your own, what you think, that you've been able to withstand the storm? Do you know what I mean by that?
It's very interesting, particularly for me leaving corporate.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. And what it was, that Nasim said, that I realized that the problem was me, mm-hmm. and that I now need to work with people and not for people. Mm-hmm. Was getting to realize that the higher you go in a corporate institution, the more you have to play along.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
To your point,
yeah.
You have to be more collegiate, you have to build more consensus. And some of that consensus building will go against your very core. It will go against some of the values that you hold very dearly. And when I sat down and had that meeting with myself, is to say, okay, do I want to continue this game? Because the reason these two jobs, I've had to leave this job, was because I refused to play.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, exactly. Are you not? Have you ever been afraid to be the lone voice, or is it because you were not afraid?
Exactly. Yeah. That got me into the situation. Yeah. Right? So that's why I said, you know what? I can't work anymore, because the next role I go into, I'll bump heads again.
Yeah, but that is a really difficult thing to say to yourself. That I'm not afraid to be the lone voice. When people are coalescing, like you said, with each other. So obviously, it's not going to work in the end.
Yeah, it depends. And that's, again, like, it's your character.
Yeah.
You know, and this is not for everyone. You know, we have to put food on the table.
Of course.
Yeah, you have to put food on the table. And, you know, if your job requires you to, sometimes you have to take one for the team, then you have to take one for the team. Yeah. One of the interesting thing about bankers, and I say this with complete respect to my former banking colleagues, is banking is a set of golden handcuffs. They give you
excellent money, summary, the package,
excellent car, excellent mortgage. You'll get your mortgage rate at 3-4%, which is why you'll find them moving into really nice places very quickly. As a result, you don't want to. You don't want to rock the boat. Your kids are going to very good schools. You don't want to rock the boat. Okay, you've seen your two guys were there before you retired, and they're looking cowed and blind.
You know,
so you're like, hey, okay, let me stay here. You mean all I have to do is roll over and play dead and say, yes, boy, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And let me say, well, play. So, and I say that with all due respect to them. So I was just like, this is not for me.
Okay.
And I'm glad I say the banking industry spat me out. And looking at that time, I was very angry with my bosses. But looking back, I'm like, Aki, you guys, thank you. Aki, thank you for being who you were and for making me dislike it very much, because I discovered a completely new thing, a new thing that I thrive in, that I enjoy. And I'm an employer now. I've got an employee. Mm-hmm. We're doing our thing. We're making our niche in the corporate governance space and in the training space. And we are loving it.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What is it that Carol Masuka Consulting does?
Well, so first, you gave me you used my title, Chief Provocateur.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is just provoke thinking. You know, people ask why, we ask why not. So we do a lot of work with boards.
Yeah.
We do board recruitment. We help recruit board members.
Yep.
We do board evaluations. We do a lot of board training. Mm-hmm. Over the last 2 years, though, I started to see a need for smaller companies, some of which are, when I say smaller, I mean these are family-owned businesses, but are turning over, some of them are turning over up to 10 billion shillings.
Yeah.
You know, these are really not small.
Yeah.
They're small in anything but name. And started to see, well, they need to start to create structures for sustainability, because your founder is getting older. Many the children don't want to be in the business, but you can see that I always say that when you set up a company, a company is a separate legal entity, separate and distinct from the owner, the human that owns it. Because it's a separate entity, it has stakeholders, it has employees, it has suppliers. You've created this entity that has got an ecosystem. If you die, it is morally reprehensible that you will allow this entity to just collapse because you died and you didn't set up structures. How do you set up the structures? First thing is create a board, whether you want to call it an advisory board. This board will help you think through succession planning.
Yeah.
Help you recruit a CEO, because you might want to get somebody that looks like you, talks like you, walks like you. And they say, like, no, let's get somebody who can be able to take this organization. I hate this word, it's such a cliche, to the next level, but to where it needs to go outside of you.
Yeah.
And so we started now helping boards helping families set up advisory boards. And so we started now creating programs, one which is called Founderitis.
Yeah.
And Founderitis is one that
Founderitis.
Yes, we call it Founderitis. So it's just that, it's that disease of founders of, I'm the only one, I'm the end all and be all. And everyone knows the Nakumat story.
Yeah.
How, if you look at a classic case of an entity that was set up and that collapsed and affected so many people because it was closely held and they hadn't set up these structures, it's Nakumat. We all love Nakumat. Until today, we're all suffering from major withdrawal symptoms of, we have to go to 5 places,
to
get the same thing that we used to enter Nakumat. We used to go to the one in Junction. Mm-hmm. Okay? Whether you're going to buy a TV, whether you're going to buy a lawnmower, a rake, a desk for your office, furniture for your home office, oranges, grapes. I mean, no one has ever taken up that space. They set up this behemoth. And we're all remiss from it, from employers to suppliers to banks, the customers. Can you imagine setting that up? So the founders who I knew, they were my customers when we were in Barclays, and they were one of the most humble, really hardworking group of people. It's just sad that this is how it ended. Yeah. And I wish that they had set up a board that would have ensured that there was some level of continuity outside of the
family. Yeah.
divorcing the founder. I only say that a founder has got three roles. He's a shareholder, he's the board, and he's management. And we'll help them look at each of those roles distinctly.
Yes.
The other thing that we do is we do communicating with impact. I've sat on about, 25 boards, Jerry? And I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that why we created Communicating with Impact was because I sat in board meetings and you're like, oh my God, when is this presentation I'm going to have? Because this presentation could have been an email. All right. And so we created Communicating with Impact because we were like, no, we're going to help people learn how to present and to use, PowerPoint is used to make points powerfully. It's not the presentation. You are the presentation.
I like it.
That's what we do.
To make the points powerful.
Yes. It's a crutch. It's not, or it's an appendage. It's not the main thing.
It's not the main thing.
You are the main thing. Yeah. That's why I woke up in the morning and came for this board meeting to listen to you. So you sent me a pre-read before. Yeah, I read it. Now you want to come and reread it like I'm in kindergarten? I don't need you to read this.
Yeah.
You talk to me. Let's have a conversation. Okay. So we now run, so those are our two sort of flagship training programs that we're running.
Okay. And on the board side, are you finding that people are taking it more seriously? How do you approach, first of all, do companies approach you or do you approach companies? Is it something that is really, because, if I look at, because we deal obviously with a lot of companies and the board setup is probably my friend who I know who can be a director on this company, especially for smaller businesses as they're, growing, scaling. How do you make sure that people take it seriously and you're spreading the gospel of, the importance of having a board that is serious about, its mandate?
So we set up a proper board. So even if it's an advisory board, meaning it's not a statutory board.
Yeah,
so if you go
it's not by statute. Yeah, it's not in the CR12.
It's not in the CR12. To mirror 100% what a statutory board would look like.
Yeah.
First thing, we get an independent chairperson. And one of the things I always advise is get an independent chairperson who is seasoned, A, and who is respected by the founder, and B, who has sat on a real statutory board and therefore knows what is required. So they will ensure that all the proper board processes are put into place, from having an agenda to having a board pack to having a strategic plan to ensuring that there are key ratios coming out of that strategic plan that attract. So that's the first thing. So then the second thing is to get directors who also are, some may not necessarily be seasoned, but are in it to win it. They're not here to waste their time. They're not here for their allowance. So we don't look for sort of people who just want to get an allowance.
Yeah.
People who really want, who are invested in a good outcome
for
this organization.
Yeah.
So how you set up that board, Jerry, will determine whether it's going to succeed or collapse. And then finally, is the founder serious about this? So by the time you're setting up the board, you've had a lot of engagement with them.
With them.
Are you
ready? Yeah.
And I tell them live, you're not going to be the chair of this organization. You're not. You can be the chair of your statutory board. No one's taking that away. But we've got to create this advisory board that's set up to become a statutory board once you become comfortable with it, once you become comfortable with reporting to external people, not your shareholders. We've done it for two now, and it's been really good.
And people are actually absorbing it.
And then we get a company secretary, yes.
Okay.
So they have a agenda, they have a board calendar, they have board committee meetings, they have board meetings, they have minutes, they have action tracking items.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're taking it very seriously.
And how do they work with the statutory board? They report to it or?
No, it's completely independent.
Okay.
For the two entities, no statutory board. The statutory board is founder and wife or founder.
Okay.
And
like family business.
It's a family business, yes. Mm-hmm. So they're quite happy to sort of plug into this advisory board.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see the benefit. Endlessly, I can see the benefit as a lawyer of having those kind of institutions in place. And I think it's really important for that message to come across because a lot of problems start there. Yes. What about the wider? Are you focusing on Kenya? Are you looking at the wider East Africa region?
The surface of Kenya. So yes, we're focusing right now on Kenya.
Yeah.
You know, we've done a lot of work in the region, Jerry, and a lot of training as well because, I'm adjunct faculty at Strathmore. In Kenya, I guess because of the depth of our economy and the span of our economy, people have moved quite fast and are quite willing to pay for these services. Not so much in our sister countries within
EAC. Not yet.
Not yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not yet. So we want to first tap this market and do it well.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you were to enter a company today, and just by looking at it on the surface, what three things would you look for and see that there's a good governance or good governance policies to start with? Or even maybe failings so that we can tap into potential clients?
If you want to know, so first is have a look at the board. How often does a board meet? What's a board's relationship with the CEO? What's the role of the company secretary? Is there a company secretary? Have a look at the action tracking. How are action items tracked?
Okay.
Is there execution? Do they keep being rolled over? Is there a way? By the time I sit through a board meeting, if you just look at the dynamic action
between them.
Between just at the board level, mm-hmm. the dynamic with the company secretary and the chair, company secretary and CEO, I'll tell you if it's a good board or a dysfunctional board. I mean, I've even sat on some where there's a lot of short shrift paid to the role of the company secretary. That company secretary can make or break the board, but people don't see it. They just look at that word secretary. And for, you know, I've had some, you've been on some boards where, for some board members, the company secretary is the person who books them the CVU facing room for the board retreating. And they're like, why didn't I get a CVU facing room when you go and you raru at the company? Yeah. What nonsense is that?
Yeah.
This person can make or break this board and this company, but they don't see it. It's a very strategic role. And the ones that get it do it very well.
Okay. Mm. All right, good. And then if you're looking at, you know, presentation styles, as you said that you do communication training, what three tips would you give us for good communication, ability to really capture the room the way that you do, Carol? Because I don't think many people can.
When you come from ICWI, I'm giving you sort of like a little tip. There's three things.
What's CWI?
Oh, communicating with impact. Thank you for calling me out. That's one of the things I tell people in training. Stop using acronyms.
Okay. CWI.
Look at me. You just got me. Yeah. It's called communicating with impact. One of the things that we say is, first of all, you have authority. Jerry, when you go and stand up in a room, people are looking up to listen to Jerry Wagasha from KAT Advocates. So you have authority. You have 5 minutes within which to make or break your time.
Yeah.
Okay. And people, the minute you start talking, people decide whether they want to listen to you or not. So the first thing we say is authority. Who's in the room? Secondly, like who's standing in front of the room? Presence. Now, presence isn't your presence, you know, in the room. It's you being very aware of who's in the room. Are they listening to you? All right. Are they looking at you or are they on their phones? So when we say that, always pay attention to, are people listening or not? The minute they're disconnected, they're all on their phones or they're talking to each other and they've disconnected your message. The third thing is impact. Have you made an impact at the end of your presentation or your talk? And what is impact? Have I transformed your mindset? When I stand up, I'm there either to inform you about something, to educate you about something, or to entertain you.
Yeah.
I'm doing one of the three things. Mm-hmm. Have I transformed your mindset? The person who came in, is that the same person who's leaving? If I've transformed your mindset in some shape or form, then I've succeeded. Now, a good thing with presence is, I always say, we are all competing with phones today.
Yeah. Do you do that thing of calling people out and saying, please get off your phone?
But you see, the thing is, I'm contracting with you. And when we do the training, we tell our participants, when I stand in front of the stage, I'm making a contract with you that I will keep you engaged for the entire time that I'm going to be up on this stage. I'm making a contract. So I better do it. I've demanded your attention. Jerry Wagasha is standing here to make a presentation. You're demanding their attention. So they give it to you. Let me tell you, Jerry, so this is how ladies operate. First, the ladies are checking out what you're wearing, okay?
I think that is very true.
That is standard. We're looking and saying, oh, that's a nice suit. Oh, my God, those shoes.
Oh, those shoes were horrible. Yeah.
Those shoes look very uncomfortable. Yeah. I wonder where she got her hair. Is that real human hair? I wonder where she bought it. That lipstick is atrocious. It's great. Women are checking you out, okay? The guys are listening to you and deciding whether they want to pay attention you or not. And that's why I also say, how are you dressed? Are you dressed in a distracting way? You want to ensure that you're not distracting them, so they're actually trying to listen to your message. Then you start talking. So first of all, how are you projecting your voice? Okay, so these people who talk like this are just muttering and everything. I always want to kill them. I'm like, why are you muttering? Because I'm then going to decide, am I going to lean in and try and pay attention to you? Or am I just going to disconnect?
Yeah.
So I was at a captain's prize at one of the golf clubs last week, and it was very interesting because It was this huge party, huge tent, 600 seating, and people were being given the mic to speak. But people have had one or two spiritual
Johnny Hookers, okay? Yeah.
And so they're not, especially what I'm saying, if you're going to do speeches at a wedding and you're going to have alcohol at the wedding, have the alcohol after, release the alcohol after, because people are not paying attention. And each speaker would try and speak and try and speak over the cacophony. No one's paying attention until the MC is like, okay, you guys, please, this is the captain, please listen. By the time an MC is having to beg you to listen, yeah, you've lost the
battle. You've lost the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, Carol, what does a 9-to-5 look like for you today?
What does that mean? It's,
are you going to give us tidbits
on what my day looks like?
Yeah, and how you manage your day. I can imagine it's not as hectic as when you were in, you know, the senior leadership.
It's actually more hectic because I'm doing, you know, I grow trees.
I grow sheep.
Yes, I'm growing trees in Matanya in Nanyuki. I've got a sheep farm there. So
really?
Yes. So I've got some dupa that I'm trying to do. And then I teach at Strathmore.
Yeah.
So there's always something going on there because there's a program we're organizing or we're trying to get participants on or designing the program. Then there's my own session, my own company that we're usually doing board recruitment for, or a board evaluation, or board training for. So the day never looks the same. There's never 2 days that look the same.
I guess that's exciting. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So there's not a boring day, and there's no, it's not boring. There's no
repetition.
There's no repetition.
What do you enjoy the most? What is the thing that really wakes you up?
About my job or what I do?
Everything. Are you in love?
That's a subject for now.
Do you know, I've never asked anyone that, but Carol, I feel like if anyone deserves it, it's you. Please, please be in love, Carol.
That's
please.
A good movie.
Oh, she's blushing. So I think I'm onto something. Okay, so what's the most enjoyable part?
About what I do?
Yeah.
One, that there's no, what do you call that word when there's...
Repetition.
There's no repetition.
Yeah.
Two, meeting people. I love it. Yeah. Because I'm an extreme extrovert.
You're so good at it.
So you're all, because you're training people, you're always meeting people, meeting new people, engaging, learning. I love to learn.
Okay.
And whenever I open my classes, I say 50% of the learning comes from me, 50% comes from you. I've learned so much. I've met, you know, the big CEOs, big directors of corporates. I've also met farmers. Last week, I was at a training. I went for a training to Zadupa conference in a place called Kantafu.
As in for the sheep?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know Kantafu?
No,
I didn't tell you where Kantafu is. First, you start on Kangundo Road. You start with Ruai.
Okay.
First, you start with Utawala.
Okay.
And you get to Ruai. After Ruai is Joska. After Joska is Kamulu. After Kamulu is Kantafu. You're now next to heaven because you've reached the end of the road. You've driven out so long, huh? And it's deep. It's on the road to Kangundo. And we were at a hotel. And we were 45 people who I would never get to meet.
Of course.
And we're all either A, aspiring dopa farmers or actual dopa farmers. So we were all mixed back from people who have got no sheep but want to start dopa farming, to people who have got two, to people who've got 10, to others who've got 600. It was amazing.
How did you land on the dopa? I mean, from everything else.
Do you know,
this is coming from a person who has no knowledge of any...
This farm in Matanya, in Laikipia. And I did not want to do Bosho and Bebe, as everybody does. And I was telling my mom, it was my mom who was like, let's buy this. We bought this. So she has hers, I have mine, my sister has hers. And I wanted to do the... What happened was this place is right next to Opejeta Jerry.
Oh, nice.
And people had decimated that area with charcoal burning. There were no trees. So I'm like, you know what? Let me go trees. Like a joke. I planted 15,000, lost 7,000 trees. Started and made tons of mistakes, you know? And my mom was like, hey, can't you bring up? No, I want to make the mistakes. We are the typical telephone farmers. Kubanesha, why are you being you're being conned left, right, and
left. You're not there.
Turn your water there. We tell you, never be fooled. You'll be conned left, right, etc. And never employ locals. They will eat your money. You have to import. You have to bring expats.
Seriously.
From another part of the country. Never employ locals. They'll finish you. And whoever's a farmer, they understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, planted the trees. And then, so I started off with one farm, which is 5 acres. I started a second one, which is 10 acres. And my God bless my mom. Mom is like,
now all this land, why can't you just bring two buzis, just bring two buris over here? They can just be eating this. Look at all of this. They can
eat.
I said, okay, fine. So I brought two condors, actually. And they started multiplying like rats. So I'm like, actually, you know what? Because we like to eat, you know, good meat. I said, let me look for a good dopa. And the rest is history.
And that's how it is.
And that's actually how it's.
My gosh, that is like a complete side hustle.
And I sold my first one. I sold about 10 last week. I was so excited.
Gosh.
Yes. So I really love it. And it stretches, Jerry, because I'm a banker and a lawyer. So our work is just contracts.
I mean, this is completely different. Yeah.
Our work is kuna mvua, kumenyesha, dami meja, kuna mezja. What do you mean kuna mezja? Zimedungwa, toxic pra 1 mm.
Oh my gosh. Even the injections. Okay. So what are you looking forward to for 2024 now?
Growth. I mean, this is a difficult time as a country.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why it's a difficult time. And it's linked to what do I laugh most about. We have all, as a country, from the CEO of the biggest firm in this country to the lady selling maize out there, we've all been unified under one thing. It's a tough environment.
Very
tough economy. The government has made it very hard to do business, from the biggest corporate to the lady out there who's being asked to sign up on e-teams and start issuing electronic invoices. And she's just a maize seller. In order for her, or the lady, the person who supplies you guys with milk over here, you probably have somebody who supplies you for your office milk. Mm-hmm. And he's just a hustler. And he's being asked to open an e-teams account so that you guys can be able to pay him, so that you can be able to expense it in your
annual the books.
Mm-hmm. So all of us are equated to that. So in 2020, so when I look at what has this difficulty, because I'm a glasses half full kind of person. We have been unified for once, not under tribe, but under hardship.
Hardship, yeah.
And we're back to the 90s, the early 90s, during Moi's time, when we were in the exact same position where we were all unified under hardship. There wasn't tribalism as much. Moi used tribalism to split us and to ensure, to entrench himself. But there wasn't that much tribalism before 1992, the first multi-party, whatever, and the post-elections that came as a result. So when I look at 2024, I'm like, hiya, we are all in the same position, but we are so damn tenacious as a country. So how are we going to toboggan this? So I was telling you, when I drove to Kantafu, my jaw dropped. I drove on Eastern Bypass because I live on Kiambu Road. I don't know if any of you have ever been on Eastern Bypass. It's a vibe.
Yeah.
It's a vibe. What? It's a whole economy. It's another country. Okay, so you know when you think about flowers, when you want to buy flowers for your garden or for your little balcony garden, my friend, oh, please, I was like, what the heck is this? It's just a whole different economy, and people are just doing their thing, and that's what I love about us as Kenyans. Actually, we just do our thing in spite of, and despite what is happening on top. So for me, 2024 is opportunity. We're going to toboa. We'll toboa this thing.
And are you positive minded?
We have to be. Jerry, I told you, may I stress about the things I'm in control of. What am I in control of? You asked me about clients. Do we go to clients? Do they come to us? A number of them come to us because they've heard of a good thing. So it's, how can we continue to make an impact? You know, it sounds again like a cliche, but what did Wangari Maathai tell us about the little bird? I'm here to do my little thing. The one that was trying to quell the forest fire with the little water on its cheek. What can we do in our little space in the space that we play? What difference can we make?
Yeah, that's what we do. Well, you've truly lightened up my day, Carol. But let's for those who are young lawyers or young people coming into work, and I know that you work with a lot of young people, let's give them tips and tricks for working well.
Sure. Yeah?
So what advice would you give to anyone looking to get into legal practice? Well, I guess it's a very different time, but when you were looking for pupillage, what was the one thing that you were looking for and how did you achieve that?
Jerry, you know, those days we're just looking for the person who decided to be my pupil master, you know? But I would imagine, you know, the law firms today, like I walked around your law firm, I'm like, yo, this is nice. Law firms did not look like this at all. And you're looking for a pupil master, and it's less about the name. In those days, we were looking for big name law firms, you know, you wanted to be in a big, but you know, and I tell my team who we work with, the exposure that they're getting would not be able to get it at a big firm because you would not have that access to the partner.
That is such a good, that is a very good point, because yes. In smaller teams, you are given much more responsibility.
Absolutely. Yeah. And exposure to clients. Yeah, exposure to clients. So it's about, it's not about the big name. It's about who's this law firm? Which, what work are they doing? What's my proximity to the partner? And therefore, what's my opportunity to
learn? Yeah, that's very good. What is your view on work-life balance? Is there such a thing?
There is, and at my firm particularly, we're very big on that. So because of COVID, we all started working from home. Post COVID, we implemented something which is we work only on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the office.
Oh wow, okay. So working
from Monday, from Wednesday, Friday, you work from home. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do Tuesday and Thursday is we work very well as a team. So you've got to be able to know one another,
yeah,
and proximity with one another. So Tuesday and Thursday, you have to come into the office. And what I tell the team is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I genuinely don't care what you're doing. But between 8 and 5, I've got to be able to pick up the phone and reach you. If you're repairing your car or you're getting your hair done, whatever you're doing, I've got to be able to reach you. And if we have a task, I'm not going to say your task is you've got to do it between 8 and 5. If you work very well at 4 a.m. to 7,
just do it.
Just do it as long as, so we're very output based. So if the deadline is Friday at noon, deliver to me Friday at noon. If you want to sleep in 2 days, but then you deliver in the last 3 days, that's fine.
Okay.
But Friday at noon, you've got to deliver.
I mean, you're making it very difficult for other employers.
True. I mean, but you know, we're a small team. We're about 7 of us. And so we can afford to do that. So for me, work-life balance is please get as much, and we don't work over weekends except you've got a client.
Yeah. You've already said that you can only control what you're in control of, and that's how you center yourself, I guess, when you have a lot on your plate. What else do you do? Do you speak to clients? I can't meet this deadline. How do you manage, navigate that? Or do you try and make sure that you're always delivering?
So managing the client, one of the rules we have internally is clients should never, ever chase you. Ever. You should be a step ahead. If you know you can't make the deadline, just send a note. Your client is a human being like you, right? Okay, we promise we deliver this on Friday. Looks like we won't be able to deliver it. We'll deliver it on Monday. So engaging the client in advance is absolutely critical.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Any other tips you have?
It's never that serious. As I always say that, it's never that serious. Have fun. Have fun at your job. You know, we spend most of your time at work. So you've got to have fun with the people that you work with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one big thing for us, is just having fun at the workplace. And owning up. When you cock up royally, own up, and own up before your boss finds out.
Yeah. Yeah. Have integrity.
Yes.
Okay. Let's do the quick fire round. Did you read them or did you not?
Yep. So you told me not to read.
But you read.
So I read, not that I'm not supposed to read.
Now that I know that you're in love, I'm so much more excited for these questions than I was before. Anyway.
Whatever.
Beach or city holiday?
None. Mountain.
Seriously?
Absolutely. The beach does nothing for me, because I guess I hate that sand in your feet and the salt in your skin. I hate cities. And like I told you, since I bought my farm, I'm convinced. My daughter's 12. She goes to college when she's 18. Out. That's why I built my house in the new kid. So I've got the farm where it's got there. I'm out in 6 years. I'm out of this godforsaken city.
And we'll never see you again.
Out near Jaff.
Near Jaff.
Yes.
I love it. Favorite place to visit? Not
Aberdares.
Okay.
The Aberdares. And it's the most best kept secret in this. People don't know about it. The Aberdare National Park. People tend to go to Savo, Amboseli, Masai Mara. It's where God went to rest on the seventh day. You've got to go there. It is beyond stunning. You park your car and then you hear this thundering sound, and there's underground rivers. You're driving and then you look on the left and this is huge waterfall. I mean, people say Thompson. You know, growing up, we only knew Thompson Falls.
Yeah.
And then the one in Thika, the fort.
Yeah.
Those are nothing. The falls in the Aberdares, and there are many, not just one. You see them from the distance. They are magnificent. The water is so pure. It's like a carrying gate. You can put a bottle in and drink straight from it. It is, I can't describe it.
And so do you do like long walks and stuff like that?
And then I love hiking.
Oh, so you do hiking?
I do a lot of hiking to relax. And then when I'm wanting to just unwind, especially like when we have done like 10 interviews, because we're doing board recruitment. So sometimes we've got 10 Zoom interviews in a day. I'll shut down, put on my sneakers, go walk. I've told you about forest.
Yeah.
So I'll go walk in Karura. It's called forest bathing.
where you just, you don't even carry headphones.
You just walk.
You just walk and just listen. And it just grounds you. There's something about nature.
Cool.
I will to Aberdare.
I will. You're doing the perfect ad. Apples, oranges.
Apples.
Pizza topping of choice. But do you eat pizza, Carol, really? You're such
a I do. I love pizza. I love Diavola, which is a spicy sausage. Yes, I love Diavola.
Favorite drink?
You can say. Singleton 12 years.
Singleton
12 years. Glenfiddich, Glenlivet, Dalwhinnie. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
I love my single malts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Amazing.
I love my single
Carol, malts. What can I say? This has been such a joy for me. Honestly, it's been so easy. And only because it's you that's such an easy interviewer and you're such a wonderful person, Carol. I'm honored to be your friend. I'm honored to have your number. I'm honored to be with you today, really. You've meant so much to me. And I don't think that you know how much, especially being in this office from where we came from. And you know that.
Jerry, can I say the word when I met you?
You can.
I met you, how insanely busy you were.
Yeah.
And then when you told me what it is that you do over the weekend, that you are actually getting a manicure and a pedicure with your laptop by the side doing this, I'm like, girl, things gotta change.
Gosh.
That is insane.
And it has.
I hope it has.
Because of you. Thank you, Carol,
so do you,
being such
so
an inspiration.
Do you have a work-life balance now?
I try more than ever. But one of the things I do try to have more of a work-life balance. But one of the things that it really made me realize is if you're going to do something, don't do it in an, you know, frustrated way. I do this because I really love being an owner in a business myself and being able to control my own life, which I think I didn't have before. Yeah.
So I'm extremely proud of you, Jim.
Thank you, Carol.
Extremely. I love people who go off, set up their own thing. This is not a small institution over here. You've set up, you're an employer.
I am. Can you imagine?
You are.
We are. Gosh.
Well done.
Thank you so much, Carol. You've been such a lovely guest.
I'm honored to have you. And a shout out to your team, Kinari and whatever in the background.
Yeah.
People can't see them, but I want to tell you that these are the guys behind the mic and behind the cameras, and they're doing a phenomenal job.
Amazing. Thanks, Carol. See you guys next month. I can't even top this, but I am going to try to. See you guys next month.